So, John, we'll get started with this first question for you. How has rail pricing been able to stay positive with such huge overhang of idled equipment?
That one is one that, unfortunately, I can't even begin to answer. First of all, talking about pricing, even in a general sense, tends to be illegal when you're doing it on behalf of a large group of companies.
Okay, no problem there. I definitely don't want to get you in any sort of trouble whatsoever. Another question for you, is the vision for the railroad industry to sell the tracks to the DOT and only own locomotives and cars, much like the trucking industry?
Absolutely not. We have no desire to let the infrastructure get out of our control. It is central to any type of successful business plan. I don't think you would find anybody in the railroad industry today even remotely interested in that possibility.
Okay. In the rail traffic GDP graph, is the diversion beginning around 2006 an economy issue, or does it reflect the capacity of the rail system?
It reflects a little bit of both. First of all, it was first, it was an economy issue, particularly in construction products and automotive products. We have been seeing those declines going on since early 2006, and in the case of the automotive industry, several years before that, you were seeing substantial declines. There was around the beginning of 2006, capacity was very tight. There was probably some business that was not taken on simply because of the tightness of capacity. That might have been the case in 2006, but by 2007, there had probably been enough capacity added in most terminals and movement lanes that there was probably not too much impact on the business levels from capacity constraints at that point in time. By 2007, there were clearly economic issues that were on the horizon that were a problem for the industry.
Okay, you have mentioned that railroad shipments are an early warning sign for recessions. What can be done to warn others about this, and is this data available to the transportation industry?
This data is published weekly by our organization. It is available on a weekly basis. It is supplied to a number of public organizations that specialize in this area, such as the Federal Reserve. It's also used by a number of the large investment companies. One that occurs to me right offhand is Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, tends to use rail car loading data as economic indicators.
Okay, great. Where is there a published rail industry growth plan to meet the upcoming freight transport demand of the coming decade or two?
We do not publish railwide growth plans. That is the responsibility of the individual railroads. You have to remember that these are private businesses, and sharing growth plans of that nature, other than doing large-scale estimates for capital requirements, sharing growth plans of that nature can get into issues such as market allocation, which violate the antitrust law.
Okay, thank you. Well, I think that was all of the questions we had for you directly. If you feel like you know an answer or want to chime in on the other questions, please do so. But we'll let you off the hot seat and put Greg back on. So, Greg, the first question for you, in the face of increasing environmental impact of human activity, which primarily occurs as a function of commerce, why are we building our warehousing and distribution systems around truck in and truck out of warehouses, moving from and to intermodal facilities rather than direct rail service?
Good question. One, your major regional distribution centers are really focused toward being closer to their customer. how effective they can run the transportation of the customer or not, and in the fact that it takes so much capital, and John can answer this too, to put in more rail, the flexibility of putting a warehouse in and using truck has much more flexibility than the rail. And there also is minimal development opportunities in rail locations today than what it would have been 10, 20 years ago. John, would you agree with that?
I would agree that for the most part, our growth areas are related one way or another to rail and trucking lines. But, about 65% of rail business now has a trucking component somewhere in the process. So we tend to be very concerned with the health of the trucking industry because of that.
On your regional distribution map, where is Detroit? If you'd like, I can bring back up your presentation.
I can answer that quickly. Detroit isn't considered a regional distribution location. Typically, how you can look at it in the size of the market. Regional distribution or inbound distribution being in LA, you know, being almost a billion square feet of warehousing. Detroit's roughly somewhere around the 30 to 40 million square feet of warehousing. For example, Indianapolis is somewhere 250 to 300,000 square, 300 million square feet of warehousing. So it's typically considered an endpoint distribution, but not regional. So that's why it wasn't on the screen.
Great, thank you. Are imports from China sustainable, and what does this mean for our ports and freight?
Well, another good question. Right now, imports from Asia are down. Our port traffic is down anywhere from 9 to 15%. Unique fact, though, is we've got a greater decrease on the West Coast than we have and reduced traffic on the East Coast. So the European to East Coast and the diversion to East Coast has stayed strong. You know, the recession or the economy has affected China as well. Development of warehousing has slowed a little bit in China. So sustainable, I can't really ask how long that will handle. I think what we're seeing, though, I can tell you that corporations we're talking to are looking at alternative sourcing locations other than China. We're seeing a tremendous discussions regarding Vietnam and Malaysia for new sources of sourcing, and that could change the traffic patterns or basically your container traffic patterns as well. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, our last question for you is, with world trade increasing faster than world GDP, are we heading towards increasing environmental costs of commerce from the impact of transportation?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a sustainability expert, and I think Noel had some comments on that. Obviously, we are moving our products farther and more often, and it's being touched more. And so I would say generally it may be a environmental, but I really don't have the information to answer on that.
Okay. Noel, did you want to chime in on that one?
Repeat the first part of that question. I'm sorry, I missed it.
Sure, no problem. With world trade increasing faster than world GDP, are we heading towards increasing environmental costs of commerce from the impact of transportation?
Well, I'll give two answers to that. First off, the long-term economic answer is that we would have to have a truly amazing environmental problem to reduce the value of world trade. Any economic study has shown that world trade benefits both sides in a substantial way. The other answer, which is slightly contradictory, is that it is pretty clear that the growth in world trade will not be what it was in the late 90s and aughts. So it will probably still exceed the growth in GDP, but it won't be at two or three times the rate. So it's not the problem. It could have been if that geometric curve that we saw earlier was sustained.
Okay, so we'll continue with you on the hot seat.
Before you ask me that question, I can't resist commenting on the question that my friend John Starks asked about railroad pricing.
Sure.
Since I don't work for a railroad, I can say what I want, unlike Mr. Gray, who is quite right to not answer the question. There's a three-part answer to that. And I was, by the way, a railroad pricer for 17 years, so I have some experience in this. First off, the railroads, when they finally figured out they were at capacity in the late 90s, came to understand that they were, in general, underpriced, at least as compared to what the market would bear, number one. And second, particularly after the hyper competition of the merger era in the late 90s and early aughts, they finally figured out, particularly when you're at capacity, that market share competition to keep your railroad full in a downturn really doesn't get you anything, because whatever you steal from your competitor, he steals right back on the next contract. Both sides have the opportunity to hand out damages that neither can prevent. And the reason why, and so they basically, from an economic standpoint, use very good sense. It's easy to do in the railroad industry because there's only, as we learned, 90% of the traffic is owned by seven or eight outfits, and so you don't have to, as you would in the trucking industry, get 300,000 people to see to make good, smart decisions. You only need to get seven. And so they've, with the great encouragement of the security industry, that the people who do their stocks, what they've done is exhibited really good business sense over the last 5 years. Something that I've been waiting for a long time, and I applaud. And of course, the benefit is, in that stunning slide that John showed, is that they've kept their capital investment up in the worst year they've had since 1933. That's extraordinary. And we need to spend money on railroads, so I applaud that.
Okay, well, thank you for your comments on that. So how do you see cap and trade affecting the freight industry?
I'll give two answers. The basic long-term answer is that transportation, by its nature, is a heavy consumer of carbon-based fuels. And therefore, it is almost certainly to be a target for any kind of cap and trade legislation. And so, it's going to be an additional cost that will be borne by the consumer of the transportation. The other half of the question is whether or not we make good policy, and understanding the full. The full environmental impact of the supply chain, not making decisions simply based on the line haul economics of one mode or another. And I mean, what I'm basically saying is that the United States has far and away the most efficient logistical system in the world, and it is distinguished by the balance between the four major modes. And if we maintain that in our public policy, then it'll be a fairly positive thing. if we single out one mode or the other for extra thing, then it will distort the economy and not help the environment either.
Laura?
Okay, great.
Laura, could I add a comment on that? Because that it is a major thing for our industry, cap and trade system. That is that the there is one other really important effect of cap and trade, and that is that since the legislation is designed to deal with carbon production at the source of that production to a great extent as possible, it will potentially have substantial effect on any industry that is energy intensive in this production process. And this is not simply transportation, but in the customer transportation, utilities, heavy industry particularly, and in fact most manufacturing industry that uses carbon produced energy to any great extent. So it goes beyond just the transportation uses of the energy to the fact that, again, we are a derived demand business, and the there are really substantial impacts for the customers of transportation, too.
Yeah, that's a good point, John. In the work I've done, the energy content of a good in its production process is roughly three times the transportation energy.
Okay, so I have a question here. It seems like there will be significant jobs. I'm sorry, we've just had a little connectivity issue, so mid-sentence, of course, it blanked out on me. But it seems that there will be significant jobs in the trucking industry in the future. Why is this not being promoted as a form of job stimulus?
Well, I can't speak to Capitol Hill, but I know the trucking firms have always been aggressive in their desire to cooperate with local employment agencies. Maybe the answer in the short term is right now there's a surplus of truck drivers, about 200,000 to 300,000, because of all these idle trucks. And so the trucking firms aren't clamoring for bodies right now, but I can guarantee you in 2 to 3 years that will be reversed. But I don't think there's ever been a problem with cooperation between local authorities and the trucking industry to employ truckers. All the stimulus in the world right now wouldn't hire a single driver if there's no freight to move. And if you notice that John mentioned that he's got quite a few, what was it, 17,000 people laid off in the railroad business. So the same thing goes there.
Yeah, thank you. Good point. If the number of trucks only reaches the 2006 levels again in 2013, should we be concerned? How does the debate in truck size and weight affect this?
Well, I think should we be concerned? If you're a seller of truck equipment, you ought to be concerned, because that implies that there will be a lot of surplus equipment for quite a while. I would turn around the issue on size and weight. As long as road congestion is relatively low, and it is right now, partly because trucks are down, but also astoundingly because passenger car travel is down, the big argument for size and weight increases is congestion, because you can, in essence, for free, reduce congestion by allowing bigger trucks. But in the absence of strong increases in congestion, there really is not a big body of support for those changes. And there's always the resistance that the automobile associations provide. And one other point about size and weight, and this is a fundamental that a lot of people in the industry don't understand, that the truckers themselves are against increases in size and weight, because the market forces will require them to reinvest in bigger equipment, and they will pass on to their customers 100% of the increase in efficiency. The people who benefit are the customers, if indeed size and weight were to lower the delivered cost. And so the place that question needs to be directed is to the millions of customers out there, and at some point, if congestion resumes its place as a major issue in the economy, then the large customers of the world will say, the only way I can decrease my cost is to get bigger trucks, and they'll head for the Capitol Hill and take that battle on.
Okay, just a couple more to go here. As we consider increasing funding possibly through the gas tax increases at both federal and state levels, I'm assuming you're asking, does this or will it affect freight decisions?
It will affect it a little bit. Remember there are two parts to this answer. There is no question that government taxation of all forms of transportation is going to go up dramatically over the next 15 years. There is simply too big of a deficit to, number one, fund infrastructure improvements, and number two, pay off. There isn't enough money to pay off the deficit unless we find new taxes, and transportation taxes are an obvious source, the one, by the way, that the Europeans depend on. I'm not saying it's good policy, I'm just saying it's inevitable. The other thing, however, is that North American transportation, all the modes, is so damned efficient that a 5% or an 8% increase in cost is not going to fundamentally change supply chains, because we're talking about an extraordinarily productive asset that, if necessary, will bear the additional cost. Now, the customer suffers, but it's not going to change. It's not going to change their systems dramatically.
Okay, and our last question: is the U.S. as a country spending enough relative to GDP compared to other nations such as China or as the EU?
Are they spending enough compared to customers in what regard?
Is the U.S. as a country spending enough relative to GDP compared to China on the transportation network?
Oh, on its network? Well, I wouldn't compare it to China, because China's gone crazy in its spending. There is, by any engineering standard, we know two things about the U.S. economy. Number one, our infrastructure is the best in the world by a factor of two or three. That's the good side. The bad side is we ain't spending enough to keep it completely fixed up. So the answer is we've got a great system that needs a little bit of expansion, but it needs a lot of repair. And so the answer to that question is, compared to our needs, we're not spending enough on infrastructure, particularly with respect to repair.
Laura, if I could add on that, in our industry, we are now at the point where we really are starting to get close to spending enough on repair. We find that we're probably not spending enough on some of the capacity issues as we go forward, even though that certainly is not an issue now and probably won't be for the next several years, but we still think that there are going to be some needs out there. But one of the things I'd urge, particularly with relationship to our industry and expect the rest of the transportation industry, is that it's easy to make comparisons to countries like China and Europe. But the fact is that when you look at what they are spending on their transportation, it looks very different. I know for our industry that when we compare what we spend on rail transportation with foreign governments, that we're comparing apples and oranges, because a big part of what they spend, even though it may be on infrastructure used occasionally by freight, is heavily focused on their passenger systems, and it's really hard to make the comparison. I know that where we have actually done comparisons with by a rate of several times of what they put into their system.
Okay, thank you, John, for adding that piece of information. Just want to thank all of you for attending today's seminar and our three speakers for giving some very informative and excellent presentations. The recorded version of this event will be available within the next week on the Talking Freight website. I just wanted to give a brief mention about the FHWA Freight Peer-to-Peer Program. This program puts the public sector and private sector professionals in touch with experts in the field and provides technical assistance in order to enhance overall freight skills and knowledge. The program is available to public entities, including state departments of transportation and MPOs. To learn more about the program or to arrange a peer exchange or to discuss participating as a peer or an expert, please visit the peer-to-peer website. Our next seminar will be held on August 19th and will be about highway networks and their relationship to freight. So with that, we will close out for the day and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you again, gentlemen.